And hello, everybody. This is Tom Harris. Welcome to the program on a beautiful spring day here in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. Now, this is a representation of Tom Harris USA episode number 5. And the reason why I'm doing a representation is because I am smack dab in the middle of C2E2 weekend. So I'm kind of busy at the moment, and I have not had time to put together a proper program. However, I will be back in 5 days with Tom Harris USA, episode number 83, and also the live show, which premieres on April 24th at 4 p.m. UK time, which would be 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. I will have some annotations and maybe some commentary at the very end of this presentation. So without further ado, here's Tom Harris USA, episode number 5. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the 5th episode of the podcast that still has no name. I'm Tom Harris, your host, and spring has finally sprung here. The weather has been absolutely gorgeous these last few days, other than a little bit of rain. But flowers are coming up now in earnest, as before there were just a few. We have cherry blossoms, right? You never really realize how many cherry blossoms there are around until this time of year. There's a ton of cherry trees in my neighborhood and along the route that I take to and from work on the train. So it's really quite nice, actually. Well, I have a surprise for you folks today. I guess not a huge surprise, but can you tell what that is? I have emails to read. Hooray! I finally have some feedback on the show. Very pleased about that. Well, let's just get right to it, shall we? Eileen from Vancouver. Hi, Eileen. Eileen is a friend of mine from the World of Warcraft, and she writes, Zarpy, I didn't know you were doing podcasts. I've just listened to the first episode, and I will be downloading the rest as soon as possible. Well, thank you very much, Eileen. I really hope that you enjoy the show, and we'll keep listening. She called me Zarpy, and obviously that's my name in-game. So very nice to hear from you. Hope you enjoy it. Bulent from Bulgaria. Well, he's from Bulgaria, but he doesn't live in Bulgaria. Bulent is a friend of mine from online. Used to belong to a gaming website that Bulent was part of. Incidentally, the same game site where I met Pete, my boyfriend. Bulent writes, you could do radio with that voice, or even audiobooks. Well, thank you for the compliment. As I said in the last episode, in my comment to Zuko, I actually did used to do radio, and I would love to do audiobooks. If anybody has a job out there who wanted me to do audiobooks, that's something that I would probably enjoy a lot. So any job offers of audiobooks, please send them my way. Anyway, thanks, Bulent, for listening to the show. My friend Nathan in Oberlin writes, hi, Nathan, and Pete and I just visited Nathan and his puppy, Cypher, while we were on vacation, and it's very good to hear from you. Nathan writes, will there be a Walpurgisnacht broadcast? Walpurgisnacht is a holiday that is still celebrated in a few places in the world. People think of it now as mainly a pagan holiday. He included a link to a Catholic website which tells the story of Saint Walpurga, or Saint Walburga, if you prefer, who the holiday is named after. After reading it, the person obviously has a very strange idea that this holiday was started as a Christian holiday. It wasn't, of course, and the night before May Day, or Beltane, to the pagans like Nathan, is a holiday that was often celebrated to celebrate the beginning of spring, and they would set bonfires, and in Scandinavia today, Walpurgisnacht is still recognized. They still celebrate it mostly in the pagan way. In Finland, where my best friend lives, they call the holiday Vappu, and it's basically an excuse for the Finns to light fires and get drunk, which really makes it no different from any other Finnish holiday. But that does bring up an interesting topic for conversation, and that is how syncretism changes the various local holidays and changes them to something other than what they were originally intended for. You see that a lot in different places in the world, and especially in Europe. At least I've seen it mainly in Europe. The most famous example that I can think of syncretism would be how the Romans took over the Greek religion and imposed their own analogs of the Greek gods on it. So instead of Zeus, you would have Jupiter. But Christians did it a lot and especially as they were going into the more remote areas. So things like Walpurgis Night, it would not have been originally necessarily a religious holiday, but would have been one of the holidays that they would use to mark different seasons and that sort of thing. It's actually very interesting in Ireland. I think the church was extremely blatant in their syncretism, and you can see it pretty much everywhere you go. The old pagan holidays still exist. The old pagan holy places, the holy wells, the holy mountains still exist. In Ireland in particular, they renamed a lot of the holy mountains that the Celts worshipped. They worshipped the mountain god Crom. And even today in Ireland, you can find the holy mountains, which would be now St. Brendan's Mountain, St. Patrick's Mountain. But every year they have a festival of people who, they make the pilgrimage to the top of the mountain. And the name of the pilgrimage is not called the Pilgrimage of St. Patrick or the Pilgrimage of St. Brendan, but it's called the Domnach na Cromdu. And Cromdu meaning black crom. So they're still celebrating very much the way they did before, except with a veneer of Christianity kind of hastily pasted over it. A lot of religions have operated this way over the year, but mainly the ones that have been evangelical in nature, who have spread themselves, by converting other people of other traditions to their way of thinking. There's a very interesting place in Ireland, incidentally, and I was there in 2002, called Monasterboice. And Monasterboice is famous for having some very old high crosses. And for those who don't know, the high crosses are large Celtic-style crosses, carved out of stone. And they're covered with pictures, like carvings, not photographs, obviously, but carvings of scenes from the Bible. But they do kind of sometimes tweak them a little bit to appeal to the Irish of that time so that they would maybe recognize a little bit, see a little bit more of their tradition in it. And one of the crosses was very interesting because they, on one side of the cross, they had scenes from the Old Testament, and on the other side of the cross, they had scenes from the New Testament. Well, the Irish didn't have a very organized religious tradition originally, but they did worship the holy mountains and the holy wells and the gods of those places. They also would venerate the heroes and the hero Cú Chulainn, who was sort of the traditional stereotypical Irish hero, I guess you'd say. Cú Chulainn was almost a superhero type of character who slew giants and so forth with a hurling stick. A hurling stick is, for those who aren't familiar with the sport of hurling, hurling is a Celtic sport that's still played in places like Ireland. It sort of looks like a kind of an enlarged golf club. It's sort of a cross between a golf club and a hockey stick. You hit a ball with it through the air. Cú Chulainn used his hurling stick as a weapon. And on the Old Testament side of this cross in Monasterboice, there's a picture of, it's supposed to be David killing Goliath. And the picture of King David on this high cross really resembles Cú Chulainn down to killing Goliath with a hurling stick. And, this was done quite deliberately because the Irish would not have known what a sling was. That wasn't a native weapon to Ireland. And so they said, this King David, he killed the giant with a sling. And the Irish would say, oh, what's a sling? I guess I suppose they would get tired of having to answer that question all the time. So they said, he killed him with a hurling stick. Oh, like Cú Chulainn. Oh, yes, we understand that. And on the other side of this high cross is the story of Jesus' crucifixion. They would instruct the populace by pointing to these carvings and telling people what happened, telling the story behind them. And for a pre-literate society, it's actually a pretty clever way of doing it. On the New Testament side, they show Jesus, who doesn't look much like the Jesus that you would see in Sunday school today, hanging on the cross, and down at the bottom of the cross there are these figures dressed in sort of chain link armor and wearing conical helmets. They would have long mustaches and axes. So in Ireland, I guess they were teaching them that Jesus was crucified by the Vikings. Now, of course, that's not really what they're teaching them. They, in order to make the Irish understand, to relate to the stories that they were teaching, they would have to say, well, Jesus was, you know, he was this person who was crucified by the Romans. And Irish would say, who are the Romans? Which is because the Romans never actually made it to Ireland. They never conquered Ireland. They had enough in the British Isles and they never bothered. You know, there's some signs that there was some trade going on and some Roman knickknacks and so forth. Roman coins have occasionally surfaced there. But the Romans never really settled Ireland. It wasn't a place that they probably knew it was there, but it wasn't considered a prize and they didn't really care about it. So the Irish really didn't know who the Romans were, but they certainly knew who the Vikings were. So when the Vikings, you know, crucified Jesus, the priest would tell them, the Romans, they're just kind of nasty guys, and you know who the Vikings are. Oh yeah, we know the Vikings. Yeah. So they portrayed them as Vikings in order to make the Irish understand. But by and large, I think of syncretism as a bad thing, and I think of most missionary work as being a bad thing, and I think it does destroy cultures that it comes into contact with, forces a way of life onto people. Now, in the early Christian church, they certainly would try to incorporate pagan traditions into the Christian teaching. That's why we have Christmas trees, and that's why we have Easter eggs, because these are pagan things that were incorporated into the celebrations. Though they would put something of a Christian spin. But when Nathan sent me that link, it was very funny because the person who wrote the article on St. Walburga seemed to think that was the original holiday and it has somehow been corrupted. Sad. Very sad. So why should it surprise anybody that Christianity used syncretism so much in spreading itself across the world? It shouldn't surprise anybody. Christianity is itself a syncretic religion. There's nothing particularly original about it. You can probably correctly describe Christianity as being a combination of Jewish mystical writings and Roman religious tradition. There are certain aspects of Christianity as is practiced today which are almost uniquely Roman. And many of those are such things such as the veneration of saints or the Holy Eucharist, which are really unique to Catholicism because they're really not biblical. Praying to saints is not something that is really mentioned in the Bible. Praying for intercession would be something that is a Roman tradition. It came from the Roman religion originally and was adopted by the Roman Catholic Church. And when Martin Luther comes along and says, well, gosh, this isn't in the Bible, so this is something that needs to come out. And similar with the teaching of the Holy Eucharist, the idea that the symbolic flesh and blood of Christ becomes a literal meat and blood. It's kind of gross, really, but it is a Roman idea, and it harkens right back to the Jupiter cult, where the Jupiter cult also practiced ritual cannibalism. And the idea was that you would eat the literal flesh and blood of the god and gain his power, gain his wisdom. The Protestants came in and they took that out of Christianity. So how did that happen? Well, we know that the Gospels, as they exist today, and the New Testament as it exists today, are the product of a political decision made by the emperor of the Roman Empire at the time, which would be the Emperor Constantine. Constantine had the Council of Nicaea come together, and they decided what would be the official teachings of the Christian Church. Prior to that, there really was no official teachings of the Christian Church. There were many, many, many mystical writings that were of Christian interest. And a group of people in the Middle East during the Roman era, and particularly in the first couple of centuries after the supposed time of Jesus, spent a lot of time gathering together these stories. They gathered together 30 Gospels and probably hundreds of epistles and writings that were of Christian themes. And this group was kind of called collectively as the Gnostics. I refer to them as the comic book collectors of the first century because they collected stories and they had a very strong interest in Christian stories. Now, wonder rabbis were nothing new. there were plenty of other characters who were much like Jesus. There was even, at the same time that Jesus supposedly lived, another Jesus that they even mention in one of the gospel stories. Well, you know, there was another Jesus too. The Gnostics collected together all of these writings and had this huge body of work. Now, the Council of Nicaea came and they said, well, okay, we have 30 gospels here, and most of them wildly contradict each other. So we need to pick gospels that are going to not contradict each other as much and collect them together. So they collected together the four that we know now that don't contradict each other quite as much. They still contradict each other, and any Christian who says they don't really doesn't know the gospels very well. The other writings, of course, you know, there were stories of Jesus as a youth. There were, you know, things that, you know, there was a gospel where Jesus was gay, and it was a political decision that was made to include what they included. So anybody claiming that this is truth because these four gospels seem to agree with each other so much, they're just ignorant of biblical history. I don't see any sign of divine inspiration here. I see a carefully calculated decision made by a group of people to support these as the official canon of the New Testament. Now, wonder rabbis are nothing new in Jewish tradition. I mean, you'll find even to this day there are Jewish sects that revere particular deceased rabbis and expect that they will rise again from the dead. The big difference, of course, is that Christianity caught on, and because it was adopted by the emperor and later adopted as the state religion of Rome to the exclusion of any other, that is why Christianity caught on. Should it have caught on? Well, maybe not. I mean, the Roman Empire did much, much better when it was a multicultural society that respected religions. As long as people paid their taxes, paid due respect to the emperor, you know, people were pretty much allowed to believe what they wanted to believe in the Roman Empire prior to Constantine. And you had this sprawling empire that encompassed a lot of different cultures. And all of these different cultures had their own customs, their own religions, their own gods. And that was not discouraged. There were a lot of Romans who were very interested in other religions, and you can find evidence of Roman families who worshipped the Roman gods and yet also worshipped the Egyptian gods. And the Isis cult in particular was very popular among ladies. So to say that the Romans persecuted Christians particularly, well, some of the emperors did, but most of the time, no, that wasn't the case. Christianity was just one of the many cults that was prevalent in Rome at the time. So when Constantine decided to make Christianity the state religion of Rome, it caused some problems. And the problem being that the Roman Empire was a multicultural society. And when you start to persecute anybody whose religion doesn't match your own, well, you do start to run into some problems. Rome, prior to this point, had not been a theocracy. There had been many religions, and when you start persecuting your other religions, then you have a multicultural society that starts to break apart. Fractures start to form, and bit by bit, the empire began to weaken. Now, there was one man who actually understood this. He actually tried to fix the problem, and this was the Emperor Julian II. Now, the church remembers Julian as kind of a sinister character. They call him Julian the Apostate. But Julian actually was kind of smart. Now, Julian was not a Christian. He had never embraced the Christian religion as the one true religion. And when Julian became emperor, he tried to save the empire by repealing these draconian laws that mandated Christianity as the state religion. And he was a very interesting character, and he was a philosopher and was very interested in other religions. He had a particular fondness for Judaism. Had he lived, he would have rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem. Can you imagine what it would be like today in the Middle East had Julian II been allowed to succeed? He would have rebuilt the temple. There might not have been a Jewish diaspora. Maybe Israel would never have ceased to exist as a state. Perhaps there wouldn't be the problems in the Middle East that we have today if Julian II had been able to complete his work. Unfortunately, you know, Julian was a military adventurist as well, and he went off and was killed fighting the Persians. And such a shame, because then immediately, of course, his successors reestablished Christianity as the state religion of Rome and sealed the fate of the Roman Empire. But I do believe that, had Julian II lived, he might have been able to save the empire. He certainly had the right ideas, but I guess we'll never know. I mean, it's very fun to speculate on, you know, what could have happened. But what was done was done. But it's a shame, kind of, that the church has given Julian such a bad rap, because he really wasn't such a bad guy. So sorry about that, running off on that long, long tangent in the little history lesson. This isn't really a show about preaching. This is really kind of a show about what I think. Now, I'm not bashing religion. When I talk about this stuff, I'm not trying to deconvert people. I don't really care what people believe. But I think that if you're going to believe something, you should learn everything you can about it. I used to be a Christian. That may come as a surprise to some people, but when I was a teenager, I was a born-again Christian for a number of years, and I was very heavily involved in the church, and I believed all this stuff uncritically. And where biblical literalism falls apart is when you actually look at it closely. I know, you know, after a while, after learning about the history of the Bible, who put it together, what their agendas may have been, and the way that the church has continued to persecute people and to, you know, quell dissent and so forth, usually through violent means, it became less and less feasible for me that it was an actual divinely inspired document. The Bible is not divinely inspired. In my opinion, the Bible is a work of fiction. I know there's a lot of people who would get upset over that, but that is what the predominance of evidence seems to support. I don't mean to bash people who believe, because that's a personal choice, but I think that you should go into your religion informed and understand. There's so much about, you know, fundamental Christianity that is nonsense. And especially here in the U.S., where people are extremely zealous about their religious faith. I suppose it's not so much in other parts of the world, but here in America, you certainly have this great mass of uneducated and uninformed people just sort of believing uncritically what people are told. And that's not unique to Christianity by any means. There's a lot of irrational beliefs that just get passed around. Things like UFOs and reincarnation, and, you know, things that I will address on this program. In particular, reincarnation is one of these silly ideas to me that makes absolutely no sense in any way. But a lot of people do believe it. And you kind of get these half-assed Eastern New Age sort of things coming in where you believe in crystal healing and feng shui and adjusting your chakras, and, you know, it's all very silly to me. I am, like I said in episode 2, I'm a rationalist. These irrational beliefs, just part of the time they amuse me, part of the time they just kind of are disturbing. And especially when you have people who get so violent about their beliefs and will actually seek to persecute other people, seek to persecute gays and lesbians, deny people rights based on what you think your religion teaches. Did you know that, you know, the kerfuffle over gay marriage now is actually, you know, it's a modern creation. In the past, people didn't care so much about homosexuality. It wasn't considered, you know, an important religious issue. It was ignored, I think, really. But if you go back to the Middle Ages, you could make a case that in the Middle Ages there was such thing as gay marriage. There are certain ceremonies that were performed in the church that seemed to be commitment ceremonies for two people of the same sex. There was a book written about it. I don't know the name right offhand, but I think if you were to go to Google and look it up, you could probably find it. I seem to recall that there was a whole book written about that. And just who were, you know, religious people to dictate to the rest of us anyway? I think those are important questions to be asked. I know that in places like Europe, they are more secular society than they are in the States. And I see that as a good thing. But I do think that people should be free to worship however they please or not worship at all. Obviously, I don't worship at all, though I used to. And one of these days I will tell the story of my conversion. There was a long discussion that took place on Facebook between somebody who I went to school with and myself. And I went into great detail about my religious journey. Perhaps I'll read that out here on the show, on one of these shows if people want to hear it. Are there any topics that people would like to hear me speak about? Well, yeah, I can spout off on just about any topic. You can get a hold of me at my email address, which is tom@tomharrisusa.com. If you think what I'm saying is complete bullshit, well, yeah, you should write to me. Let's have a dialogue. I love to hear from people. I, you know, have my first feedback on the show this time, and I just think it's fantastic. I really look forward to hearing from people, and even if you disagree with me, I hope that you write. Yeah, obviously, if you're kind of abusive and so forth, you're going to be ignored. But I'm interested in hearing what other people think. So once again, the email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. You send me an email, and chances are I will read it out on the air. Well, that seems to be about all the time I have for this show. I guess I'll see you next time. Until then, take it easy, stay well, and hope to hear from you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. Alright, so there you have it, Tom Harris USA, episode number 5. As originally broadcast in the beginning of May of 2009, almost a year ago, I was taking notes to do annotations, and I really don't see much that I need to reply to or follow up on in this episode. It seems to be pretty fairly well self-contained. Interestingly enough, you know, at that point in time, we were just starting to get the flowers and the cherry blossoms and so forth. We had a pretty mild winter this year, so we actually have that stuff right now. So we have the same sort of weather pattern and the same sort of the flowers are coming up. And just in the last 48 hours, as I record this, all the leaves on the trees have just kind of merged, just all kind of all at once. So really interesting stuff. And I can't help but think, looking back at these shows that are done a year ago, how relaxed, and I sound like I'm going to fall asleep at any moment. It's just, I think nowadays I try to keep the shows at a little bit of a faster pace and not be quite as relaxed. Now, I managed to cut about 5 minutes out of that show just taking out pauses alone, not even cutting out anything that I said. So that gives you some idea. Nowadays I would spend about 15 minutes editing my show, but it took me over a half an hour to edit this show because of all the pauses and so forth. So I like to think that the show has gotten better over time. Hopefully it has. And I don't make as many long pauses or and at least I try to edit those out. We'll see when we get to the live show exactly how that goes. But it is an interesting show. Syncretism is one of those topics that still interests me a great deal. And when I'm talking here about Monaster Boyce, I'm talking about a place that I actually went myself and actually looked at these high crosses. And it, of course, it brings back these memories of my trip to Ireland, and I always loved that. Even though that was a good long time ago, way back in 2002. So, anyway, thanks for listening. I do appreciate all the feedback and so forth. I do apologize for the semi-rerun show. If you have any comments, questions, and so forth, once again, the email address is tom@tomharrisusa.com. So this is going to be a little bit short, but that's okay. Once again, I'd like to remind you of the live show, which premieres on April 24th, 2010, at 4 p.m. UK time, which is 10 a.m. here in Chicago and 11 a.m. on the East Coast of the United States. And that will be on unitedkingdomradio.co.uk. And you can call in using Skype by sending your messages to the Skype address, United Kingdom Radio. And I will be happy to take your calls live on the air, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm getting pretty excited about this new live show thing. And I know I've talked about it a lot, but hey, you know, that's what's going on. So that's what I'm going to talk about. Anyhow, I'm going to cut this off now. Thanks for listening once again. And as always, have a great afternoon. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, signing off. We'll see you next time for Tom Harris USA episode number 83.